Today on another chilling episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, when the clock strikes 3:33 in the morning, inside the dark bedroom one man is sleeping in, he is startled to discover he is unable to move or even breathe. Some may call this sleep paralysis, while others may suspect something much more sinister is going on behind the dark walls of this home. What was causing this disturbing and terrifying experience? We ask the question and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. To share your real ghost stories with us, we would absolutely love to hear them. And I'm messing with my mic right now because I think one of the cleaning people like started twisting knobs or something. It doesn't quite seem right. But anyway, leave us a review there at Apple Podcasts, and be sure to press subscribe if you download podcasts. You don't miss any episodes of the program. It's Tony and Todd with you on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. What's going on?
I think one of the cleaning people touched my stuff again.
They did. So they did. And it's still dusty as hell. But I don't know. It feels really bassy. And I don't know. Check. There we go. Well, we'll go with that. So anyway.
It sounds fine on this end. It sounds perfect. So
I think sometimes it's my hearing that changes.
Yes.
Some days it's just like, oh, I'm very trebly today. Or I'm very bassy today. And yeah, because otherwise, stuff doesn't get bumped anymore. The dogs can't mess with it. The dogs used to mess with it. The dogs were my worst culprit. They would come in here and they literally would rip the knobs off of the mic processors. So
once those are broke, would the whole peg be broken off inside too?
No, it would just take the, there's like caps on them. And it just takes it right off. But yeah, I'd find them like gnawing on all these different pieces of studio equipment. And it was just very random, but they're over here staring at me right now. Speaking of dogs, I swear to God, Buddy, who is one I had a long time ago, and I just recently got him back. Great dog, super friendly. He is a border collie. I think he might be a mix. I don't know. But he's very much border collie in the mind. So I have, there's a large kennel in the garage where if I have to leave for a couple hours or something, I put him in there because he likes to destroy the trim around doors.
right.
If I don't. So Sting's good about it. So Sting stays in the laundry room and then Buddy goes to the other room. But in this morning, we had a thunderstorm at about 4 a.m. And I know he's afraid of thunder. So I woke up. And I went out to get him. And the only reason he was in there last night was because he had a bath and he was soaking wet and I didn't want him in my bed. So I think, well, maybe he's more dry, you know, now. So I go out there and he's just standing by the door, like out of the cage. This is metal wire cage. And he's just like, hi. I'm like, what the hell? So I go and look at the cage. Did I forget to shut it? No, it's all shut and locked. He's on the other side of it. He's out of it.
How did that happen?
I don't know. And I could tell, like, there was some, he's, like, bending the bars of part of the cage. I don't know how he does it. He just hit the chair, the thing on my chair, and made me sink down as I'm talking about it. He literally has his paw on the lever. yeah, I'm talking about you, buddy. he's smart. He's scary smart. So I thought, okay, well, you know, I thought I looked at it. And I figured there was a way that he could have bent some of the metal, like, or pulled it out and then kind of scrunched his body through. I don't know. I mean, like, a cat could do it, but this was still a pretty tiny space. And I was even more concerned, like, what if he got stuck like that, you know, and couldn't breathe? So I'm like, well, I got to take a look at this later because it was 4 in the morning. And then I get it all put back together because the metal was a little bit bent, but I put it back. I said, okay, I'm going now. I put him in there to try it again. I get back home. He's out of it again. This time, the metal does not look messed with at all. It looks exactly like it was when I locked it and left him there.
Is there like a tray or something in the bottom that slides or anything?
A trap door? Yeah, there's a tray. Yeah.
Because my dog would do this where it would like dig at the tray and the yeah. tray would eventually slip out and that would leave the bottom open that he could actually kind of lift the thing up and walk out underneath. But this sounds like that's not the case.
And he can't either because there's stuff on top of it. There's a wall behind him and there's stuff on the side of it. So the front is the only exposed part of this cage.
So this dog has learned how to unlock the door, get out, and relock the door.
I don't know if that's what he's doing or not, because I have no way to explain how these doors are locked again. I don't get it.
It's definitely something you got to put a camera on yeah. or have the cleaning people go out and watch him.
Guys, just sit right here. Stare at the dog. That's all.
Yeah, since you can't clean my house and you mess with my processor, you just go stand outside
stare
for a
at
while
the dog.
And watch the dog.
Stare at the dog. Yeah, it's, I don't know, but I think I'm going to have to do a camera. I'm going to grab one of the ones that I have and see what, I'll put one of the Ring ones out there. Then it'll go with like motion. But I don't know. I just don't know.
You should definitely stream it and then get people to pay for admission, because some of us would actually watch that to see what happens.
And then suddenly, like, the dog just teleports out of it. It's like yes. he's standing there and all of a sudden he's like in the other side and he just starts walking away. I don't know. Maybe he's playing with a Ouija board with Sting when I'm gone or something. Are you doing a Ouija board? I said no more Ouija. He's getting real close to me. It's like, no, Dad. No Ouija board. but, you know, I bet if I had one on the floor and a planchette, the two of them would start, like, pawing at it.
Probably.
Would that work?
All hell would break loose in the house. Everything would happen then.
That'd be great. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We would love to hear them. Let's today start out with a phone call. Let me grab one of these right here and hear your real ghost story. Go ahead. Like now. Okay, thank you.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So this is a story. It took place about 12 years ago in a town called Akron, Ohio, at a hospital called St. Thomas, the birthplace of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob worked on the second floor there and in the chapel, and led the original Alcoholics Anonymous meetings at his home, and then moved them to St. Thomas Hospital. So I was an orderly working the ER on the midnight shift in this hospital that was originally a nursing school for nuns. And my job was to clean the bays and make sure everything was tidy, 7P to 7A, right? So occasionally, a orthopedics hospital called Crystal Clinic would have us clean their surgical bays in the basement if they had a later surgery after their techs had gone home. And I would get a note that I was to go down. I had a key to their bay. Only I and the police had a key to their bay at night, and I would go in, and I would clean, and then I would leave, turn around, lock, and go back upstairs. As you can imagine, walking around in a creepy old hospital on midnight shift was not something I liked to do. Additionally, the morgue was a right-hand turn, and St. Thomas, Crystal Clinic's, was a left-hand turn, and then radiology was straight ahead. Now, if you walked to radiology, there was a hallway that hooked left and dead-ended into next day recovery for Crystal Clinic. And I did not have a key for that particular wing. Only the police did. So I got a message to go down and clean. I opened it up. The surgery bays were, there were eight of them, four on each side of a hallway, and all of them had retractable curtains so you could look if you opened all the curtains from the front to the back. So I would go down because it's creepy. I would pull all the curtains. I would turn all the lights on. I would clean the bay or two bays or three bays, whatever needed to be done. And then I would one by one shut off the lights, pull the curtains, going back to the door, turn around, inspect to make sure I had done so, go back, lock the door, jiggle the handle, make sure it was closed, and then head back upstairs. Well, one night, after, you know, getting into my shift, I had a note on my locker. Hey, you forgot to turn off the radio in bay six. You know, don't do that. The nurses don't like people being there to begin with after shift, and we want to keep them happy. Because in every surgery bay, there's a boom box that the doctors can listen to, the surgeons can listen to while they're operating, right? And they're up on like a corner shelf, you know, 7 feet up in the air. I'm 6'4". I could reach up. I could turn them on. I could turn them off because they have the remotes, right? So no problem. Go back down next week, turn everything on, pull all the curtains, turn the radio on, turn the radio off, et cetera, going back, listen, right? Head back, get into work the next week. There's a note. Hey, you did it again. This time you left three radios on. And if you do this again, I'm going to have to write you up. Okay. So annoyed, I go down the next week. You might ask, well, why would you turn any radio on? Well, I was curious. So I do my thing, turn on the radios. When I'm done, unplug every single stereo and then make my way back. Now, I knew that I would probably get in trouble for unplugging the radios, but at least I'd know, right, that either the nurses were messing with me or something like that. I could say, aha, they couldn't have been on because they were unplugged. So the next day, note, pink slip. Hey, I had to write you up because you left three radios on and four lights. And when you left, the door was unlocked, which I know is not possible unless the Akron PD had went down there and did something. I asked them, they did not. Well, sometime after that, going out, I saw a radiology tech walk past me to go to radiology. And I figured, that's odd. It's midnight. They hate being down there. They generally only come down when they have to take somebody to get x-rays. Then they'll go right back up and hang with the nurses upstairs in the ER. So I went to go say, you know, hi to Jenny. We'll call her Jenny. And I follow her down, and I make that left in the hallway, and there's no lights. I walk to the door that's always locked, and there's nobody there. The only place that somebody could have gone was past me in a four-foot hallway or through a door that I nor anyone else has a key for except Akron PD. And looking back, I do remember that she had a head covering on, which, of course, in modern hospitals, all the girls wear ponytails and have scrubs. They don't wear hair. They don't wear things to keep their hair back. But I remember her looking like one of the nurses that you would see in the pictures from the old times, where the nuns doubled as nurses and they were trained there. So just a bizarre time. I left shortly after that, but it was a bizarre time, you know, working in a haunted hospital. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, I would think so, where those things continue to go on even when you unplug them and lights. And what are your thoughts?
I hate stories like that because I know what it would do to my psyche to know that I had shut something off or locked something or turned something off and have it, you know, turn back on and all that kind of, and then to get in trouble for it would be just the worst thing for me. Like, I would be so pissed off. Something about hospitals, and especially older hospitals and medical facilities and all that kind of stuff. Boy, there's a lot of energy there. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily dead people, but because of all the people coming through and the emergency situations that go, I mean, they're just these big buildings just holding on to all this energy for so much time. And I think that's why stuff happens there, but it's creepy as hell.
Yeah, I can't imagine dealing with that. Another thought that I had was, the surgeons having like a boombox playing while they're operating on somebody. For me, I don't think that would be a great idea, because no matter what I'm doing, if I'm listening to music or something, I start like tapping my finger and, or like, you know, moving extremities of my body around and like to the beat. And if I'm like operating on someone, I could see that going really bad really quick.
Yeah. All of a sudden there's no more spleen, you know, that kind of thing.
It's like, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, Chumbawamba. And I suppose to each their own. The other thought I have was, what if, you know, you're under and you're, but you're not quite under. You're under enough where you can't communicate. So it's almost like paralysis is where you'd be. and you're feeling all the cutting and the horrible things, and like one of your favorite songs is playing, and it just totally ruins the song for you because you will forever be reliving the moments of being chopped up while the music is playing in the background and you can't do anything about it.
See, you actually were taking me to a really scary place when you were talking about that, because I was thinking this route. I was thinking you're kind of awake, but you're just out enough where you can't respond.
Yeah.
You're being operated on, and you see the people operating on you. You see the doctor and the nurses, but then beyond them, you see something else standing there watching.
Yeah.
That would be creepy.
Yeah, that would be horrible. That would be absolutely horrible. These are great things to talk about before a week before I have surgery.
Are you having surgery?
Yeah, my arm. I do tons of things around here. Physical labor intensive things. Mm-hmm. There's very simple things I do too, like taking the garbage out, for example.
Oh God.
Well, that's what got me. Literally pulling. I pulled him down the driveway, which is about like a 7-acre walk. And so it's a good deal if you're pulling a couple garbage cans with you. But it's pretty flat. So I didn't even move much. I go in front of the cans, I put my arms back behind me, and then just kind of pull them forward so they lean and I can just pull them, you know? And all of a sudden I hear a snap on my left arm. And it's like just this weird, it wasn't even painful. It was a weird tingle that like went up my arm. I'm like, what the hell was that? And I thought maybe I dislocated my elbow or something, because that can kind of have that sensation. And then the pain I was feeling was down in that specific area. So I thought, well, hopefully that's just that. And then I just kind of took care of it that night and planned on going to the walk-in in the morning. Went to the walk-in. Oh, you tore your bicep muscle. Like from the elbow, not from up, because the common one is up on your shoulder, right. But from the elbow. And I luckily the other muscles have been, you know, picking up the I don't even feel any pain right on it right now, but there's certain ways I use it. It just doesn't, it's hard to do anything with it, because it's surprising what that bicep controls, a lot less than you actually think. But I have to get it fixed. They're like, you know, if you were like 75, we would just say, just live with it. It's not a big deal. So like, if I was closer to death, I wouldn't have to have the surgery. But they're like, no, you're young. You're going to want to use it more. So they have to like go in there. It's an outpatient, like a 45-minute procedure. They cut into my arm and then they stretch the muscle back down. And then they got to like, I don't know, screw it or wrap it up in, you know, like a noose or something. And then they say a prayer and they sprinkle some dust on me and then I'm done. I don't know. It's these new procedures, HMOs. So that's what I have to have done a week from, by the time this airs, I'll be done, but it's going to be going on in about a week from today that we're recording. A week from
tomorrow.
Is there
going to be any rehab for you or anything like that?
I guess it'll be like physical therapy. I have to wear out kind of a brace thing, which I've already tried on. I can see functioning pretty easily in it, at least around the studio. And then I do like physical therapy after that for quite a while.
Do you realize, I mean, this is like exactly like what happened with my knee, like the tendon mm-hmm. ripped off and all, I mean, and yeah. The surgery and then all that. And yeah, I'm not the same. I'll never be the same. I'll be limping around for the rest of my life. So just be aware, this may not turn out great for you.
Always a true and honest friend, Todd is.
Listen, I mean, I just don't want you to expect too much. Okay.
honestly, it's weird because so this was 2 weeks ago, this thing happened. Yesterday, I moved in my barn. I have all sorts of stuff. I got large cattle panels. I have a ton of.
I mean, who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Who
I mean,
doesn't have large cattle panels on their, you know, on their walls? And I got that. I have a ton of lumber in there from projects I've done and like extra stuff, and a whole bunch of buckets and animal food and all that. And yesterday I'm down there because I got to clean half of the building out or move it to the other side because I'm going to do some construction down in that barn. So I moved all that yesterday myself with my gimpy arm. And it really, I didn't notice much. Then I also went and mowed the lawn, ran over a large thing of barbed wire. So I had to jack up the lawnmower and then get under that and then try and cut off all this ancient barbed wire from around the blades. So I don't know. I've been pretty productive with it not being in its greatest health. So I just want it to be back at least like this. But the thing is, it'd be difficult for me to turn a screwdriver right now with that hand.
Isn't that weird? Like yeah. You could do all that other stuff, but not that. I don't know. Your whole life, you're rolling over barbed wire, all that kind of stuff, moving stuff so you can build some stuff in your barn.
Well,
got an interesting little life.
I'm putting a movie theater in the barn, so it'll be the movie theater. That's my horrible dad joke of that one, because there's literally cows right outside the window. So quite often, I'm sure they'll be watching a movie in there, and there will be mooing. You'll be able to hear audibly in that barn. It'll be great for like those real tear jerkers. And some like, oh my God, I can't believe that. It'll put a little comedy relief into everything. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go. This letter, it says, hey guys, this is Tom from Virginia. Usually call in, but decided to write this one about my first few paranormal experiences. My initiation into the spirit world was not a pleasant one, nor was it voluntary. At the time, I lived in a small town called Pine Grove, Virginia, just off the Appalachian Trail. In 2002, after several weeks of unusual activity in my home, including things moving on their own, a radio coming on by itself, my name appearing in bold black letters on the screen of my television and awaking me repeatedly at 3:33 a.m., it all came to a climax one morning when I was attacked as I slept. I awoke face down on my pillow and felt a heavy weight on my back. As I turned, I noticed the clock read 3:33 a.m. as usual. The shadow moved from left to right in the minimal light provided by the room. It was after I turned onto my side that I realized I wasn't taking in air. After several attempts, my lungs finally began to fill a little at a time. And when I was able, I screamed several times. I believe I was close to shock, not to mention death as well. The next day, this visitor was gone as the cloud that filled my home had lifted. This was the first and by far the most negative experience I've had with a spirit. In fact, it was some 10 years before my next experience took place. As I sat in the security office at the private girls' school at 4 a.m. to take my usual 30-minute break, something was different this time. It was a very cold February morning, below 10 degrees. I first noticed a small lamplight on the desk flicker. I noticed a shadow go past the 1-inch clearance at the bottom of the office door and then back again, blocking the light in the hallway. It was like a long coat or dress someone would be wearing that flared out as it hung just off the door. Then the lights went out. At first, I thought of a power outage due to the cold, but as I glanced out the window, I saw that the rest of the campus still had light. I sat motionless for 20 or 30 seconds. The hair on my arm stood straight up, just like in the movies. As frightened as I was, curiosity prevailed, and I began to speak. Is someone here in this room with me? If so, what's your name? I promised to leave if you want me to, but first, I ask that you turn the lights back on. And with that, the power immediately returned, and I nervously made my way out of the building. The next night, I returned equipment and captured my first EVP, a female spirit saying, I hear something. In the past 9 years, I've amassed numerous recorded abnormalities in the realm of spiritual phenomena. Although I have had a few negative experiences, perhaps warnings, my curiosity has always outweighed my fear. Thanks, guys. EPP for life. Tom Owens. What are your thoughts on all of that?
I love it when investigations are done and there may not be necessarily a response back and forth that's really clear, but something from the other side is captured somehow. Usually it's an EVP or something, and they know something's going on too, but they can't quite figure it out. So it's almost like another dimension where they're real and we're the unknown entity that they're dealing with. And I've seen that happen a couple of times on investigations. And here's another story of that happening. That's so cool to me.
That is. That's a really interesting story. And I mean, that would be so terrifying where it's just there a short period of time, but all of the things that they experienced in the 3:33. And I hope I never have to experience anything like that. But Very interesting. 855-853-4802 is our number. Next story says, hi, it's Felicia. I'd like to provide some updates regarding some occurrences that took place after the day Dad and I heard a growl in our basement. After that day, the lamp next to my bed would turn itself on, usually around 5 in the morning. This is the time I wake up to get ready for work. First, I thought it was an electrical problem. This is an old lamp, after all. So I switched my old lamp with a more recently purchased one. Nothing changed. Then, while lying down one night, the sound of someone breathing resonated throughout my room. I spent the next few minutes distracting myself by internet surfing until drowsiness set in. Next morning, I said, I don't mind you turning on the light, but you did kind of freak me out when you were breathing out loud. Do they even need to breathe? If you want to stay in my room, you'll need to follow some rules. One, don't breathe. Make any strange noises, throw things, or do anything too crazy. Two, do not scare or harass my cat, friends, or relatives, because that's just rude. If you can follow these simple rules, you are welcome to be my roommate. The next few weeks, the lights turning on was the only daily occurrence. Unfortunately, I'd also wake up to the glaring light on weekends, too. So I said, thank you for helping me wake up in the morning. I really appreciate it. I do not work weekends, though, and would love to have some extra sleep. The lamp only turned on Monday through Friday. Afterward, until one day it stopped and there were no longer cold spots in my room. Mom asked if my friend was still around, and I said, no, he left. The next morning, I heard a voice saying, I'm back. Later on, I exchanged the old lamp for one I received as a Christmas gift. It's a knob switch and adjusts the lamp's brightness, and for a few days it stayed off. One morning, the lamp was switching brightness settings erratically, as if he was trying to say, see, I can figure this out. Now we're back to our daily routine. Recently, he roamed around the house when everyone is up. The atmosphere is lively. One night, Mom wanted to watch TV, but could not find the remote anywhere. After a few minutes searching with Dad, they turned around and it was suddenly on the couch. We all watched TV together that night. Finally, after a night of drinking and band practice, Dad sent me a video Mom shot with her phone. It's a very brief clip of Dad playing his stand-up bass while Mom is laughing in the background. Of course, we listened to it on high volume over and over again while laughing. Then I asked, hey, did you guys have a friend over that night? He said, no, why? I responded with, there's a male voice in the background. I wanted to tell him that voice sounded like it came from the same individual that growled in the basement and is currently hanging out in my room. But you can only say so much before hearing someone laugh while you say, oh, you. I'm going to send a file to you guys. I may have to turn up the volume a bit to hear it, but the voice should hopefully be clear. At the very end of this letter, I entered what Dad and I had heard. Okay. The rest is kind of has a message about the audio, which I do not have the audio here in front of me, by the way. But that would be creepy as hell.
Yeah. And it's interesting that, you know, something like that is there for so long and then it kind of goes away and then it announces that it's back. It's like if that energy is there, if it's stuck there, if it's hanging out there, what makes it decide to go? What makes it allowed it to go? And why would it come back? That's so cool.
It is. And I don't know any of the answers to that, but it is interesting. It kind of plays into one of the things that I always say I'm very surprised by is that in more cases than not, the way to get something to leave you alone or to go away has been simply kind of reasoning with it, which to me, I don't know. It just seems like such like really like that works. That's all you got to do.
Well, I think a lot of times what we're dealing with is human, you know, past human energy and the way you deal with humans for the most part, not all of them, mm-hmm. but for the most part, most humans can be, you know, you can reckon with them and you can kind of talk through things. And I think if this energy was human, I think the first step is always explaining your situation, how it's making you feel, you know, what you're okay with, what you're not okay with. And I'm going to guess at least 75% of the time, things change for the better. Mm-hmm. You might just as in life, you might have some real assholes out there that you're dealing with that aren't going to change anything and maybe get worse or whatever. But I'm always for communicating right out of the box. Be mm-hmm. very upfront with whatever's there, the energy person, who knows, just be very upfront. You know, this is kind of okay, but this is what you can do and this is what I won't allow and just see what happens.
Do they have to listen though?
I don't think they have to, but again, you know, with most humans, I think try to listen and adjust their behavior to make the other person comfortable. So I think if you're dealing with the energy of a person who is that kind of person, you're probably going to get good results.
Are there consequences on the other side? If it's like, somebody's like, please stop terrorizing me. And you're like, yeah, fuck it, I'm gonna keep terrorizing you. You know, like a child terrorizing ants or something, you know, outside. When you're the ghost, it's like, guess what? Guess the people are my ant farm now. Is there like, oh, you did this, now you get 5 extra years of being a ghost here on Earth. You know, is it like a system of rank or something, you think? Or is it just, you know, don't be an asshole?
Well, I know a lot of people who believe in like reincarnation and stuff like that believe that you come back to Earth over and over and over until you learn all these lessons. And I'm sure that the way your energy treats other energy has a lot to do with whether or not you quote unquote graduate to the next level or not. So
interesting. And then eventually you reach the top and you hit Xenu. And it turns out it's a volcano.
Listen, I'd rather hit Xanadu and go roller skating with Olivia Newton-John. But
hey, it's all possible with your first purchase and your first level of Scientology.
Yeah,
welcome on. Yeah,
I'm not doing any roller skating, by the way. So don't. Yeah, that's not going
to
happen.
It's another way to injure yourself. You know, it's like
my other knee will be under operation.
I'm having to re-examine like everything I do in life right now physically, because I'm like, shit, this shouldn't have done that, but maybe this is going to start happening now.
Getting older.
Kind of sucks. All right, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Get access to all the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, and more. All of it commercial free. Check it out. You'll love it. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Todd, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.